doesn't. Mission.
You're listening to This Week in Radio News. Radio news about radio waves, radio art, and more. I'm Tom Rowe, your host, and we'll travel across the ether to hear what's going on in radio news. Many American cities once taxed new fads such as jukeboxes and pinball machines with amusement taxes. Now Carl Bode at DSL Reports writes that Chicago is about to start applying amusement taxes to Netflix, Spotify, Dropbox, Amazon Cloud, and others. A 9% tax on, quote, electronically delivered amusements, unquote, and, quote, non-possessory computer leases, unquote, may bring $12 million to the city's coffers annually. Quote, the amusement tax applies to charges paid for the privilege to witness, view, or participate in an amusement, unquote, states the city's new ruling. Quote, this includes not only charges paid for the privilege to witness, view, or participate in amusements in person, but also charges paid for the privilege to witness, view, or participate in amusements that are delivered electronically, unquote. This is Tamara reporting for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC. Ellen Nakashima reported in the Washington Post that the Senate Intelligence Committee last week approved legislation that would require websites to report on suspected terrorist postings on the internet. The measure is in the 2016 intelligence authorization and would need to be voted on by the full Senate and get through the House and President, too. If a website is not currently monitoring their site for content, they won't be forced to start now. The story says the measure applies to, quote, electronic communications service providers, unquote, including email services such as Google and Yahoo and others like Twitter and Facebook. Twitter has already been busy looking for terrorist tweets, removing 10,000 accounts over 2 days in April. Any online company that, quote, obtains actual knowledge of any terrorist activity shall provide to the appropriate authorities the facts or circumstances of the alleged terrorist activity, unquote, under the proposal. Removing the content is not mandated, just reporting it. Quote, the intelligence bill would turn communication service providers into the speech police, while providing them little guidance about what speech they must report to the police, unquote, said Gregory Nojem, senior counsel for the Center for Democracy and Technology. Quote, if it becomes law, their natural tendency will be to err on the side of reporting anything that might be characterized as terrorist activity, even if it is not, and their duty to report will chill speech on the internet that relates to terrorism, unquote. Pacifica Radio is holding their national elections, and Eljoy Williams posted this audio announcement about the Pacifica Radio elections.
Greetings to all of you listening on the Pacifica Airways. This is your National Election Supervisor, Eljoy Williams, with some important information about the 2015 local station board election process. Your participation as a candidate, a voter, or by helping with outreach efforts is crucial to the success of your station. A lot of you have questions about this process, and here with a few questions is frequent listener Kim. Thanks for your help, Kim.
No problem, Joy. So what can you tell us about this election?
Sure. This is an election for the local station board. This station is part of Pacifica Radio, America's oldest independent media network and the only radio network with a democratically elected board. The local station board has a lot of power. The board members oversee programming, approve the station's budget, and create policy to ensure that programs represent the needs of listeners and the community served by the station.
Wow. That is a lot of responsibility. As a listener, can I be involved in this process? How?
Sure, you can. You can participate in the process in a number of ways. First, by being a member of your local station, by running as a candidate, or helping to spread the word about the election.
Well, I listen to Pacifica every day. Does that make me a member?
Being a regular listener is great, but to really support the station and participate in the election process, you must become a member by making a minimum annual donation of $25 or perform 3 hours of volunteer work at the station before midnight, Tuesday, July 14th.
So my next question is, let's say I want to do more than vote. I want to actually become a candidate. What are the requirements to run as a candidate?
Well, just like a voter, you will also need to be a current member of the station by Tuesday, July 14th. And you also need to complete the candidate nomination package. You can find that on the website at elections.pacifica.org. You can also get a hard copy from your local election supervisor.
What's in the nomination package? What materials do I have to submit, and when is it due?
That's a lot of questions in one, but I can answer them. You have to submit a written candidate statement, 15 petition signatures from other members of the station, and sign the fair campaign pledge that you will follow the rules of the election process. All of this must be submitted before 10 p.m. on Tuesday, July 14th, in order to qualify as a candidate.
Wait, 15 signatures from members? I have about 100 Facebook friends, but I don't know if they're all members of the station. How can I get support from 15 other members?
Well, you can ask your Facebook friends if they're members of the station, for one, but your local election supervisor will also host a signing party at the station so other members can support you and sign your petition.
Oh, okay. Then I'm going to get my candidate statement together right away. I can submit that online too, right?
You sure can. You can find all of the information you need about the election on the website at elections.pacifica.org. And when you submit your statement, it will be posted right on the website.
Okay, so after I renew my membership by donating at least $25 to the station, submit my materials to become a candidate before Tuesday, July 14th, what happens next?
Well, providing that all of your submitted materials are in and your candidacy is verified, what's next is the campaign.
I've never been a candidate before or campaigned before. What do I do and where do I campaign?
It's okay. Your local election supervisor will help you through the process. The local election supervisor will host several on-air and in-person opportunities to make your opinions known to the voting public and to debate with other candidates during the election period.
This is so exciting. This is so great that listeners like me get to participate in the process. Thanks for all this information, Joy. I'm going to get started getting my materials together right now.
That's so great, Kim. And to those of you listening, you can get involved in this process too. Remember, you must renew or become a member of your station by midnight on Tuesday, July 14th to vote in this election. And to be a candidate, you must be a member and submit the materials in the candidate nomination package by 10 p.m. on Tuesday, July 14th. Please visit the elections website at elections.pacifica.org for up-to-date information, to see a list of candidates running at your station, and for contact information for your local election supervisor.
Next on This Week in Radio News, we head to Cincinnati, where local television channel 12 WKRC-TV reports there's a pirate radio station that's playing nothing but Ghetto Boys songs, just songs by the Ghetto Boys, and they've been doing it for months. It's always fun to listen to a local newscast about pirate radio and check it for errors. Let's listen along.
Pirates at work on the west side tonight, haven't stolen treasure, rather an FM radio frequency. And what they're playing is music with enough foul language to get residents calling the feds. Local 12's Anjanette Levy is in West Price Hill tonight. She's got their concerns, Anjanette.
Well, Brad, that low band FM station was playing earlier tonight, or earlier this afternoon, rather, but tonight it's not playing much of anything except static. People over here just happen to stumble.
All right, so radio stations don't play static. Static is the absence of radio stations.
Upon this station, and we can tell you what they're hearing is not music to their ears.
My mother's always stressing I ain't living right, but I ain't going out without a fight.
Mind Playing Tricks on Me. It's one of the Ghetto Boys' biggest hits. Drive along Glenway Avenue, and you'll hear them unedited on 87.9 FM.
What's going down like somebody didn't get.
Pete Whitty says someone hijacked the frequency a couple of months ago, and it's playing rap music on radios. And
about 87.9, it's below 88 on the FM dial, and 87.7 FM is actually the same as Channel 6 on old analog televisions.
Westwood, West Price Hill, and North Fairmount. It's filled with words you can't say on the radio or TV.
It's very challenging as a parent to listen to this channel and then think that my kids, on a whim or by being influenced by friends, could tune this in.
And you're listening to WMKV 89.3 FM.
No one knows who's hijacked the frequency, but Dave Schramm of WMKV FM says it's not difficult to do.
Not many people realize you can go on the internet and literally buy an exciter and an antenna and the cabling to go with it. You do not need an FCC license to do this.
But
this is true. The reporter did a good thing and went to a local radio station and found somebody who was kind of an expert. There's often engineer types experts. Oftentimes local radio stations will be run by people who used to do pirate radio.
Tram says it's a very bad idea. The FCC takes pirate radio seriously, and the signal could interfere with licensed radio stations.
If it ends up being one of the larger radio groups in town that you end up stepping on with your frequency, you're going to find out they're not going to be very happy with you.
I'm staring at the woman on the corner.
Local hip-hop artist Ilyas Nasheed says the Ghetto Boys are an important part of rap music history, but he thinks what's going on 87.9 is pretty odd.
I don't see the motivation for it, because like when I used to hear about pirate radio, it would be somebody playing music that wasn't very popular in the mainstream, or they would be doing something that was very politically motivated.
The Ghetto Boys actually play Cincinnati this weekend. By then, Pete Whitty hopes whomever is playing their music will be off the air.
We need the FCC to address this, and I'm kind of curious to know how they will do this.
And again, Pete Whitty said it's not the genre, it's not the rap music that bothers him, it's simply the vulgar language. I contacted the FCC for a comment. The agency declined. Reporting live from West Hill, Anjanette Levy, Local 12 News. Brad?
Anjanette, thank you. Dave Schramm says that the FCC will typically give a pirate radio operator a warning to stop hijacking the signal, but if the use continues, the person can get up to a $10,000 fine.
That's correct. The first effort they make is to give a warning, usually a warning letter to the address in question, and then the second attempt will be with a police action or try to confiscate the transmitter. I'm Tom Rowe. You're listening to This Week in Radio News. And next up, Lucas Diederik, a radio artist from Belgium, is in the Waveform studio, brought here by legendary radio artist Gregory Whitehead. We're now here with Lucas. And Lucas, how do you pronounce your last name?
Dreke.
Dreke?
Lucas Dreke. Yeah, that's it.
And,
it's hard, right?
And you're here visiting New York and Massachusetts today, I guess, with Gregory Whitehead?
Yeah, it is.
Gregory, welcome to Wavefarm.
Lucas is a student, originally a student of a long-standing friend of mine, a brilliant producer, who a radio artist herself, who recently, unfortunately, left us. And she put Lucas in touch with me. I was instantly impressed by how should I put it? It's a kind of... it's a very unstable, I think, a beautifully unstable kind of radio aesthetic that your work, Lucas, immediately just reached out and grabbed my ears, because it's very hard to name. It's very hard to know what it is. And I think the best radio work is an invitation, really, not in any self-conscious way, but an invitation to try to figure out, what am I listening to?
What is going on?
Yeah. Mm.
So yeah, we met through former teacher and mentor of me. So that's how I got in touch, and we had a phone call. And I also organized listening sessions back in Belgium. So we had a listening session with Gregory, and then we talked via Skype. And
are you here in the United States just to visit Gregory, or did you come for other what?
No, I'm just here to like add. I'm working on a project for the WDR, the Westdeutsche Rundfunk. So I'm working on a fiction piece, and then I wanted to add some parts that Gregory is reading. And then I send an email like, oh, would you want to do this? And then he said it would be nice to just come over and work on it together. So I thought, yeah, why not? So I booked a ticket, and I took a bit of time off from my half-time job so I could work on this. And so it's a bit of vacation, it's a bit of wandering around, and I'd never been to the States, never been to New York, so it was an occasion to be here and to collaborate and meet my great radio hero, Gregory.
Ah, please. But much more important than New York, right, Tom, is to come up here to Wave Farm. I mean, really, GXC is where, you know, is really the epicenter of American radio art right now. So, but Lucas, if you could describe a little bit about, I mean, your work is so full of this sense of disorientation or dislocation or maybe echolocation to some extent, but it's almost like you are inviting listeners into this questioning. Is this something that's on your part of your way of working? I mean, how can you say a little bit about how it is that you develop a work?
Like how something is being made?
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly, it just starts off with an idea that's way too big to actually make something about it, and then I need to like capture it in something that is more that is bordered. Can you say that? Like it's limited, and then throughout this, I'm aspiring to tell something about the big idea that came first, and it's I don't know.
But you're not.
It's hard to make an analyze of what's happening and when you're working on it.
But it's that open quality. I mean, it's not like you're beginning. It's not like you're beginning with an idea that you somehow have a sense how it's all going to resolve. I mean, you don't. The map is very. I love is that the map is a lot of fog in the map, and I like that. It's very tentative. I think when I listen to your work, I get a sense of someone looking themselves, and that's not usual. I mean, very often there's, you know, a lot of work is really just holding the listener's hand and dragging them through a map that is pretty well articulated.
No, that's not the goal. I mean, like the term you use, like with the forensic theater, like the listener comes in and they need to make the puzzle. And that doesn't mean that there isn't a general idea. I mean, it's not that it's that open or that not well thought that it's, I mean, I thought about it and I know what it's supposed to do or what it's supposed to mean, but still, like, the listener needs to find out himself by getting through it and trying to figure out what was going on. And when it comes to the work, I think I like to add a lot of found footage, like found sounds that sometimes from things that friends recorded or things I find online or things that I find in the library, trying to match it up that it becomes. I really want the pieces to be connected with the real world in a way that doesn't like it should have some, should be entangled in stuff that we know, like sounds we hear or samples and things I heard on television or things I heard on classical radio. I like to put it all in so it becomes this. I don't know.
You hesitate to come up with that final word that puts it yourself into a box, right?
I don't know how to put it. Well, it wasn't clear, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to.
Well, it's very hybrid. I mean, your work is borrowing. I mean, what another thing which I so much want to encourage, because again, it's rare, is that there's a tremendous sense of freedom. I mean, you use whatever the piece seems to need. I mean, you're not afraid to use whatever really is required to keep somehow stumbling through this foggy, you know, this foggy area. And I like that there's an honest confusion, you know. In other words, you know, there's so many pieces that pretend to be puzzles, but, you know, in a sense, the best puzzles are, there are a lot of different pieces to the puzzle, but they're not necessarily to the same final puzzle. They're all puzzle pieces, but sometimes, and isn't that more the nature of the world that we live in? There's a lot of evidence. We can find endless bits of evidence in the forensic theater, but they're not necessarily connected to the same crime or to the same event. And sometimes we have to be humble. You know, there's a certain humility in your work, which is very appealing, because, you know, the nature of any kind of artistic inquiry, I think, requires that kind of humbleness to think, you know, sometimes I'm just lost. I have no idea. I don't have any idea. I think this might be important, but I'm not sure. And that tentative quality, I think, is very refreshing now. So, I mean, is this...
Trying to grasp something, and sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
But I do agree on, like, I mean, I want the pieces to sound messy. And sometimes when I work on it, it's, I mean, I don't have enough time. And I said, like, all right, I will just make a classical story out of it. I will make this beginning and it will be clear and I will set the characters. And then there will be this first plot point. And then the character will get reflexive. And then when there's not enough time, I start doing this. And then I listen to it again. I'm like, damn, what? I mean, yeah, it's I can't do it, but still it doesn't tell anything about... It doesn't tell anything about the real world, whatever that's supposed to mean. I mean, it should. I mean, if life is messy, I think the piece should be messy.
Exactly.
That's, I mean, it should. That's why I want to get in as many languages as possible, as many samples as possible. I mean, you could have. I mean, it should sound messy. It should sound condensed without it being. I mean, it shouldn't be whatever. I mean, it's about something, but in this subject I try to put in as much as possible to, like, get the idea, like, this is telling something about the real life. And is it, that's a big, it sounds like a, yeah,
is it something like a mirror that you know, you everybody looks at it and we get a different sort of viewpoint depending on what their reference points to the different you know, how they see it or hear it?
You mean like that it's my ambition to change, like, the view on what's going on?
I just mean that you're not putting out a didactic single point of view story. Mm-hmm. You're sort of leaving it up to the listener to get what they want from it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not what they want, but
what they need.
Yeah, want and need. Where have I heard that? Well, Tom has heard me probably Tom a dozen times, and I don't mean to. I'm about to go on a little bit of a rant, and I don't mean to single out This American Life, but it is the case. It is undeniable that This American Life is a show which not just celebrates or embraces, but really, in a sense, seeks out and exemplifies that kind of simple-minded ABC, you know, middle, end. There's a false sense of. There's always a false sense of resolution in that way of making radio that seems antithetical to me to good, you know, to good art, really, which shouldn't be about this kind of clarity, that particular kind of clarity, but rather, you know, in a sense, you say, well, yeah, I mean, reality is actually multivalent. It's multidimensional. There's always another story within the story within the story within the story. And thus, there's a huge amount of things that we don't know, and thus this messiness that you refer to. It's not just opening up, you know, okay, come on in, and whatever you need, then you can be happy and leave, because you are actually trying to communicate more of a richness, I think, a richness of how all these different layers and stories and sound sources and references, how they all kind of interweave. Yeah. But you never pretend to have it all figured out, and I like that. Yeah,
you can actually explain it better than I do. No, but that's the thing. Yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, I just feel a bit uncomfortable talking about it, because, like,
of course,
you
of
made
course.
So many pieces, and I just made, like, maybe 20 or something, I don't know. So it's really, like, limited.
Yeah,
and then from out of this 20, maybe, like, two of them I like. So I still have, like, loads of work to do. So I just feel like, I feel like it just started, and it's great to be here and to visit Gregory and, like, see what's going on. And it really encouraged me, like, to continue and work harder without it feeling working like it is working hard. It's just like continue and like
what got you started,
what
in making
when did I start?
Yeah, or what got you, what was the reason?
I like to listen to this when I was younger. I think when I was 12 I had my own. I got my own personal computer in my room. And then I was internet connection, and then I started listening to this radio communication with spaceships that NASA puts online, and I just love to listen to that. And I don't know why it just, and large parts of it are really absurd. Like you have the Apollo 8 mission, I think, that they're reading from the Bible. While it was the first time, I think it was in 68, it was the first time they were orbiting moon, and then like it was the 24th of December, so Christmas Eve, and they get in touch with NASA, and then they start reading this this part that, like, they start reading the Bible, and it's really absurd, because like, I mean, if there should be one experience like that, like maybe doesn't make you religious, it's like they're orbiting around the moon, I think, and it has some kind of, there's some kind of sadness in it, because I had the impression later on that it was like they were so lost in space that they were trying to find something to get hold on, and then like there's this Bible, there's this clear-cut story, like, all right, we're orbiting moon, we can't grasp this feeling, so we just get the Bible, we start reading, and it will get us back like in touch with Earth, and I was fascinated.
How much energy does it take?
You can ask these questions, but I don't believe in relationships if there's no unspoken agreements to remain silent about certain issues. I don't believe you should throw the truth in people's faces.
So it's better if we just shut up?
No. But whether that means that you have to define everything, well, I think, yeah. Saying I'd rather not say that is equally fair. It's equally true.
Could it be that reality, if we can speak of it, is maybe not very desirable? I mean, could it be that fiction is a way is maybe preferable?
But being aware of what is real and true, and choosing a harmless illusion, well, that seems ideal.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.